Good to see those out this morning. And we're hoping in things in which that we might be able to talk about and discuss will be of some profit to all of us. I'd like for us to think about a passage that's found over in the book of John chapter 11. And here of John writing concerning that of Lazarus. And we find in the town where that Lazarus was, of Bethany, there was Mary and her sister Martha. But on the scene, we realize, as most of us probably do already know, that Lazarus had died. And so they had sent for Jesus. And of course, Jesus, when he heard about the news that Lazarus is dead, but he tarried several days before he went that directly or quickly. And in my own mind, I do believe that there was a reason why the Lord did that. Sometimes we learn that if there is a waiting period, it gives us some time to think or think things through. But the situation here that Jesus goes to aid of Mary and Martha, and if you notice in verse 22, it says, "But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee." And Jesus saith unto her, "Thy brother shall rise again." And then we find that it continues with Martha, and Martha said to him, "You know, Lord, I know that he'll rise again the last day." So she believed in a resurrection. She believed that there would be a resurrection. And I know that he'll raise again in the last day. But Jesus said in verse 25 that I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall not die or never die. Believest thou this? And certainly when we think about that and realize, especially when you look at verse 26, when he says, "Whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this?" Now, what part of man was he talking to? Was he talking to the average ordinary man that walks down the street, that has the flesh as we all do? Or was he talking about the inner man? We realize and know that the inner man will never die. But the outer man will die, will perish. But the inner man will continue to live or be somewhere. But as we continue on, we go on down into the chapter. And we find from this that in verse 38, "Jesus therefore again, groaning in himself, cometh to the grave." It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. And Jesus said, "Take ye away the stone." Martha, the sister of him that was dead, said unto him, "Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days." And Jesus said unto her, "Said not I unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God?" And I think there's something in this that we want to talk about, although we're going to lift the title of the lesson that we have. And the title of the lesson would be, "Roll away the stone of unbelief." And a lot of times in our lives that we do have that stone of unbelief, that we are not as believing as we should be. And your Jesus could have himself by just the word saying stone be removed, and it could have been done. But he didn't do it that way. Jesus tells them, you roll away the stone. Anyone that could have the ability to raise someone from the dead would surely have the power to just remove a stone from an opening. But Jesus, I do believe, was testing their faith. Did they have enough faith to roll that stone away? Or would they walk away from the words of Jesus? You know, sometimes it is in our lives that although the Lord has made great and precious promises to us, we sometimes have a lack of belief. We are not fully convinced in what the Lord has said. We're not really deep down within us believing what God has said. Because sometimes it is we within ourselves, we want to explore and understand why. But we don't have all the answers. God has not given us all the answers as to why some things happen. We sometimes have to come to a conclusion within ourselves. Just like why? Why did Lazarus, here at this point, why did he die? Well, he was sick. Could have been a reason. But we do know in this situation that Lazarus had been buried and he'd been dead for 4 days. But this shows us that Jesus has the power over death. That Jesus has the power over death. And when Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life, he that believes in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. We can put that within ourselves. We can put that within our thinking, and we can put our confidence in that. Because the Lord will not lie to us. He will not. What about the stone in which that we have sometimes that we may not be willing to accept the idea or the thought that God can forgive me? Have you ever stopped to think, and I've run across individuals down through time, and they think, well, you know, because of their life in which that they lived, that God just certainly has no use for them. And certainly, when we read the scripture, we realize and know that he has given us example after example of men who were very, very terrible. And what I mean by terrible, they were men in which that certainly, you wouldn't want to run across. And one good example, even in our New Testament, we have a Saul of Tarsus. Now, a Christian, Saul of Tarsus, you wouldn't want to run into him. Because he was an individual in which that was out to destroy, to wipe Christianity off the earth. He was out to destroy it. But yet, we find that Paul himself made it clear in 1 Timothy 1 that he was the chiefest of sinners. And if God could forgive him of what he did, then certainly he could forgive you and me for what we do. But sometimes we have the lack of faith in believing and trusting in God. And there's people in which that will definitely refuse to be immersed because they cannot see, they cannot understand why would it be necessary for me to get in water in order to have salvation? Why would it be necessary? You see, we don't have to understand all the whys. We don't need to understand all the whys. What we need to do is to accept Jesus as his word. And whenever that, if we would have been back there in that day, would have been standing there when Jesus says, Lazarus, come forth. You think it would have shocked us? No doubt it probably would. But now we see that it was done and Jesus did it. It ain't a shock to us, is it? When we fully believe in what the Bible teaches. Shouldn't be no shock to us to realize and know that Jesus had the power to do this. So if God tells us that we need to obey the gospel in order to be saved, why should we question it? We don't need to know all the whys. Why did God make the world round instead of square? We don't need to know. We don't need to know. He could have made it square just as he did round, but his decision was to make it round. There may be some scientific equation to discuss that, but the fact is God did it that way. And God set it in order, and it's a working. So why question it? There'll be no need for us to question it. So when it comes to our lives and lives in which that we live, when we look at, for instance, you take, well, Matthew chapter 6, for instance. Here we find that Jesus is giving some things in which that man should think upon. And when you get down into the chapter, we find him making it clear on a lot of different things in life that you and me, we deal with. One thing he talks about, and that's been prayer. Because a lot of people pray. A lot of people pray. Now, they may not pray the right way, but a lot of people pray. And so here was individuals who was asking Jesus, Lord, you need to teach us how to pray. So when I read that, I realize and know that a person could pray and still yet not do it right. But the Lord gives us some instructions. He said, after this manner, therefore, pray ye. And so he gives them some instructions and gives them a list of things. And one of the things in that prayer was, give us this day our daily bread. Now, when we stop and think about that and realize that here is a prayer that sometimes that is said or read in a public assembly. But there's a reason in which that it should not be like for us today. And I don't want to get into that. But one thing I do want us to notice about this prayer is the fact that one thing is stated in there. Give us what? This day. Our daily bread. And to me it seems to be more of a family thing. a family situation, a family gathering, because you're requesting this on a daily basis when you pray. Give us today. Give us today. Not next week, not next year, not day before yesterday, but today. Give us today. Today. So if it be used in the sense of a prayer for people to come when they come to an assembly such as this, this will be the only time we'll be asking God to give us our daily bread. But as a family gathering, we think about it more, don't we? But if we go on down into the chapter, we find him talking to them about their treasures. And this is like in verse 19. And the Lord is not condemning us on putting up things or being saving and having when we need it. He's not condemning that. But the Lord wants us to realize and know where should our heart be. That's what he's wanting us to know. And then he goes down and talks about the fact in verse 24 that no one can serve two masters. You see, whatever is directing us, that's what we are servants to. Whatever thing in which that we rely upon or person to make decisions, that's what we're following. And so it says you can't serve two masters. But then he goes on down into the chapter and verse 27. He said, which of you can take, by taking thought, can add one cubit unto his stature? Can't do it. Or, why take ye thought for raiment? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. The lilies of the field. And right now, you know, and maybe it's been for the last few months that we can see the beauty in which that the great Creator has presented for us. But yet he says, you consider. In other words, you take note, you look at the lilies of the field. They grow, they toil not, neither do they spin. And yet, he said, I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. And he says, if God so clothed the field, which today is and tomorrow is cast into the oven, shall he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? It is to the situation in our society that we sometimes put our faith in materialism. We put our faith in materialism. And our faith is not to be in materialism because it's going to eventually decay and be no more. Now, that's not saying that we're not to make preparations for life. Because the Lord teaches us to do that. But it's a matter of where our heart is. Because, for instance, if our United States would just simply collapse, economy would collapse, and all the money that we have in the world would be useless. You see, as a Christian, we know that our trust is not in that. It's not. Because as Christians, we know that we will continue to survive because God has promised us that it will be done. He's promised that. Why? Because he said, you look at it. The fields. The things in which that are in the fields. What you see is going to be gone, but yet when you look at it, God takes care of them. And are not you much more valuable? When he talks about the sparrow, talking about to eat. And here he talks about the three necessities of mankind: shelter, food, and clothing. Talks about these three necessities. And God has promised that he'd take care of all of that. And he even promised to take care of all the little birds that we see from time to time. He said, I feed them. I take care of them. But you know one thing about it. God did not put out there on a limb a sign telling the bird where to stop and get its lunch. The bird knows, because God has placed it within them, that sometimes it is they have to scratch or dig or work if they're going to get something to eat. But in our society today, it's not usually like that. Because so many times people think, well, you know, God's going to take care of me. And them not doing anything for themselves. And we need to realize that in order for us to depend on God, God needs to be able to depend on us to do our part. Sometimes it is, we may not have the faith that we need. And when we go back and notice the prayer in which that Jesus had taught them to pray, give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us of our debts as we forgive our debtors. Now, it was an important thing for God's people to pray. It was important. But how many of us have the stone of unbelief when it comes to prayer? Now, I know prayer can't change all things. But I do know prayer can change a lot of things. And what I mean by that is, for the sense that you take someone who lives their life in sin, it makes no difference how much they pray, it's not going to change their lives. The relationship with God. It's not going to do it. And because God will not force himself upon that individual or make that individual make decisions in life. He gives us the freedom to make those choices. But I do really and truly believe if there are those who are diligently seeking and wanting what the truth is, that God will help them come to that point and face that truth. When we want forgiveness, we do what God tells us to do. Even when Jesus, remember, and he says, after this manner, therefore, pray ye. And he gives them some instructions. And so when it comes to our lives, how much trust do we have in Christ? How much belief do we have in the Lord? Do we have enough belief in the Lord to take him at his word? And realize and know him by taking him at his word, when we do what the Lord requires of us, that we have that in which that we are seeking him for. Salvation is a gift. And if something is a gift to you, you don't have to ask individuals for it. If someone would say, you know, I've got a gift for you in the car, you can have it. Now, do we have to stand and beg and plead them, hey, let me have my gift out of the car. Let me have my gift. You don't have to do that, do you? Because it's yours. It's been given to you. And salvation is a gift that's given to every individual who's willing to accept it. But you see, we must accept it upon what God teaches us and the way He teaches us to accept it. If I have unbelief, if I think, well, I just cannot see no reason why I need to do this or need to do that. Again, we don't need to understand every why. But we do need to do what the Lord calls upon us to do. And so when it comes to in John 11, when He asks them to roll away the stone, remove the stone of unbelief for us today, as we're talking about. What kind of belief do you have in God? Do you have the assurance and knowing that what God has promised? And we can look at an example of Abraham, for instance, when he said he staggered not at the promises of God through unbelief. So we have to have that belief in God. We have to have that. We may think it might be foolish, but God that says, this is what I tell you to do. You may have thought it might have been foolish if you lived in the days of Noah, when he's out there working on that ark, trying to get it prepared, and it hadn't ever rained, but he was doing it upon what God told him to do. If we have enough faith in doing what God tells us to do, God's got enough power to save us. We don't have to discredit that. We don't have to question that. What hinders you from not obeying the gospel? What keeps you from not doing what God says? If the Christians in the first century would have had unbelief in God, you think they would have died for what they believed? No. They were willing to submit to God's will, even if it did take their physical life. They were willing to do that. But if you're not a Christian, you need to be one, because that's what God wants you to be. Put enough faith in Him. Trust Him. Remove that stone of unbelief if you have it there. Submit yourself to Christ and He'll save you. While together we stand, we'll be saved.